when you've built yourself up as one of the most, if not the most, iconic computer company in the world, what do you do next? Well, apparently, you do Oprah, and then you do Steven Spielberg, and then you do everyone else in Hollywood. This week on Download This Show, Apple has made its trillions over the years, really with hardware. We're talking MacBooks and iPods and iPhones and iPads. Now they're pivoting into services. They've announced this week a new Netflix Challenger video streaming service, a new credit card, and a digital magazine subscription. So, will the gamble pay off? And is any of it worth getting? And what does it mean for the future of how all of us consume? Now let's find out. This is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. My name is Mark Fennell and welcome to Download This Show. Yes, indeed, it is a brand new episode of Download This Show and it is a triumphant return. I make it sound like you've come in on a unicorn steed. Claire
yes,
Riley.
I've fought many brave battles while I've been gone and I returneth to the studios.
She is a senior editor with the technology website CNET. Claire Riley, you can take off the chainmail now. It's getting weird.
It's exhausting. It's exhausting. Yes, thank you for having me back.
Alongside Claire Riley, we have the technology and gaming editor for Pedestrian Group.
Stepping up in the world, you know?
Yeah. I don't know why I said that like William Shatner.
He's it was great though.
Captain's Log. It's the show, the start of the show is getting sillier and sillier every time, and it's my fault. It's also Oprah's fault, and Steven Spielberg's fault, and Jennifer Aniston's fault, which is not a segue, but let's imagine that it is. After many years of speculation, Apple have announced, they've announced their new video streaming service, their competitor to Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. Then they announced a bunch of other stuff like a credit card and Apple News. We will get to those things. It is the Apple Palooza show. Not uncritically, for those of you that are fans of Android. I know you're ready to tweet. But we are going to start off with Apple's potential competitor to Netflix. And there's a bunch of unanswered questions, right? But let's start with what we know. Matt, what did they announce and what do we know it's going to look like?
So there were two different things. They had like a revamped Apple TV app, which they want to make it like a one-stop shop for everything bar Netflix, because I don't think they wanted a bar of it, to be honest.
Strong use of bar.
Thank you very much.
Very good, very good.
Yeah.
You raised the bar there.
Big bar guy over here.
And no more bars.
But yeah, they want to make it that you can log on and it'll have, you can pay for subscriptions to services separately. So you can have your HBO, your Showtime, your ESPN Plus or whatever you want in one place. And then on the other side of things, they've got their own original content place now, Apple TV Plus, which will, I don't know. They basically, it looks like they've thrown $2 billion at a lot of different stars. You know, Steven Spielberg, M. Night Shyamalan, J.J. Abrams, Oprah Winfrey, the list goes on, to make content for this service. But they haven't really shown us a lot of that content.
No.
So we really don't know. I mean, we know what it's going to be. We just don't know what it looks like yet.
Yeah, they put out a two very sexy looking reels, which told you almost nothing.
Yep.
Right? So it was like there was one reel that was like, I'm Steven Spielberg and I'm going to narrate this. And it was all the famous faces telling you about the joy of storytelling. And then another one which was kind of had snippets of behind the scenes-y sort of stuff. But is it weird to launch a service and not announce, like with clips and trailers, your biggest products? Is that strange?
I think what they're hoping is that Apple, that it can rely on a bit of star power. So I guess the thing for Apple has always been that it's sleek, it's sexy, it's simple.
Mm.
And so you just need to say, Oprah's going to be doing some stuff. It's going to be great because she's Oprah, just trust us. But it is interesting when you think about, say when Netflix launched in Australia and there were a whole bunch of originals, and obviously we knew there were existing content deals in the works there with shows like House of Cards. But I remember it being really big titles. So you knew you had your House of Cards, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, a couple of big series. But Netflix is so much more than that, and they've spent billions of dollars.
$6 billion, I think, is their annual commissioning budget.
Netflix.
Yeah,
yeah, right. So Apple has spent, I've heard $1 to $2 billion that they've spent on content. But other than these big, the Jennifer Aniston and Reese Witherspoon show, the J.J. Abrams and Sarah Bareilles?
Bareilles?
Thank you. I have only ever seen that written down.
Bareilles.
But they've got these big profile people. But what's going to be the stuff that kind of, those are the big rocks, you know? If you imagine filling a jar, they're the big rocks. What's the pebbles and sand that's going to fall in between?
The surprise shows, the Stranger Things and stuff
right?
like that.
And exactly, the little weird cult specials. And I think the big thing that we saw change when we lost our video stores and we got streaming services is we got a real homogenization of content and we got stuff that is sort of designed to appeal to the masses because when you have, I think, 1.4 billion Apple devices out there, they want to be getting it onto as many people's devices. Devices as possible. And any iPhone, iPad, Apple TV is going to be able to have access to these shows if they pay. So I think maybe I want to know more about the shows, but I also want to know more about the other non-high profile shows. You know, what other docos are going to be on there other than Oprah's docos?
All of them will just be Oprah.
Yeah.
Just looking at it going, you're worth it.
Yeah, it's going to be amazing. I did love the moment in the keynote when Tim Cook and Oprah hugged and Tim just wiped away a tear because Oprah just has that effect on people.
Wow. It's almost like she
gives off an emotional moment and you get an emotional moment.
It's like she gives off like self-actualization pheromones.
Oh, she must be amazing. I just want to live in her aura.
Right. So look, there's a bunch of things to talk across here and I do just want to stay with the content question, right? Because whenever a streaming service launches, content is always placed at the front of that. Like, we are going to launch with that. But is it perhaps an indication of the way Apple sees themselves in the market that they don't feel like they have to do that, that the idea is enough? Because, like, I look at it and I go, great, there are too many streaming services, mm-hmm. particularly in the US, where you've got things like Hulu and Amazon's a much bigger player over there, and there's a lot, right? Yeah. And I go, the only way you get people to sign up really is with, oh, shit, I got to see that show.
Yeah.
Right? You've got that. And without putting that front and center, I question.
I don't know. I kind of disagree with you because I think that's very true. And I was looking at, say, on the Apple TV app. So there's Apple TV Plus, which is their streaming service. The Apple TV app relaunch is going to have, you know, sign in once and you'll be able to get recommendations across your Stars account, your Hulu account, your HBO account. So you see all of those different accounts you can have, and there are so many. So I think they're maybe not going to try and go up against that, and it's the 1.4 billion devices that people will get their iPhone, have an update and just go, oh, it's easy. Gosh, I don't want to have this pejorative sort of description of Apple users, but just easy to sleepwalk in and
are
just kind of
are you calling us lazy?
Yeah, no, but, I mean, there's a lot of in outside the tech world of early adopters where I think there's a pretty even split. People love Apple and Android for different reasons, but I know a lot of people that just say, can I FaceTime you? And I say, that's actually just an Apple product. And they're like, oh, well, just ask Siri. Once again, they've got great name recognition there because that's an Apple product. I think there's a lot of people that just go, it comes to my iPhone. This is the way I do things now. Yeah. And I think for Apple, it's a way of saying, well, hardware sales are declining, but we have a $10 billion service industry. And that is, you know, we've had success with Apple Music. We've had success with iTunes. We've had all these different successes. I see no reason why Apple TV Plus would be different.
Okay, so not only do we not necessarily know that much about the shows, although there is an announcement with a sort of a slate of show titles, we just haven't seen them yet. Mm. The other big question is we don't know how much it's going to cost, Matt.
Yeah.
There's been some speculation that it will obviously be paid. There's also been some speculation that they may not charge for it, that it might be a way of getting people to download it fast. I don't know how much stock I put in that argument. It seems to defeat the purpose of a subscription service.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't they have the reason I ask these questions is because when Apple launch anything, they've normally got the whole thing sewn up. Like, think about when they launch hardware. They're like, it does this, it does this, it does this. And then they say, pardon me. And then they say, how much it costs. And the price comes out pretty quickly. It's such a package. It's weird to have them launch something and not have that stuff locked in.
Yeah, no, definitely. And it's, I don't know whether it's just them trying to gauge a reaction to see what people are thinking and if people are like focusing on that star power and going like, holy crap, I want to see what J.J. Abrams is doing, or I want to see this and this and this. Or I guess I don't know, they're drip feeding information to see if maybe they don't know the pricing yet. Maybe they don't know that maybe they've got as many unknowns as us, and they're trying to kind of pick – information out of the reaction to go, okay, well, this is obviously like a strong driver for us. Maybe we need to focus on this, or people aren't maybe willing to pay that much. Let's go this, or, you know, tech experts are saying that it might cost around this much, so maybe that's where we need to hit. Like, I think, I don't know, that's my take on why they're doing it this way, because it is an unknown for them. Like, it's not something that they've done before in this thing, and it's,
but
I guess
there's Apple Music though. Like, it's not like they, like when they launched Apple Music, they said how much it was going to cost.
Yeah, but I think when they launched Apple Music, there wasn't a lot of competitors in that space, whereas now they're coming into an environment that is full, like everyone's doing it, right?
They really only had to match Spotify with Apple Music. Yeah. Yeah. That's probably their main competitor there. So,
do you think it's weird that they didn't launch with the number?
Okay, I think it's both weird, annoying, and probably like what, par for the course now. I think the huge revelations from Apple, those are probably a thing of the past, because, you know, obviously it's history of being big and then the different, you know, years of Steve being out and then back in again, all those things. But I think really launch of the iPhone 10 years ago, that's when they had their heyday, when they pulled the iPad out of the manila folder that was on the table, like all those kinds of amazing one more thing moments.
Mm. And drama.
Drama. And now I think they don't have as much hardware, you know, sexy hardware innovations to show. I think that services are interesting, but they're sort of, you know, they're something that we use every day. So I don't know if it's that extreme drama factor that they're looking for. So I think maybe drip feeding this kind of information is how they kind of add a little sizzle to the steak that's not interesting us anymore. I don't know. That's maybe I've just seen too many of these launch events and I'm starting to get jaded.
And of course, before we move on to the other things that they announced, we're talking about this as a global product, because we also have no idea what an Australian version of it's going to look like. So we've been talking a lot about their initial app, the Apple TV app, as distinct from Apple TV Plus, which is their dedicated streaming service. The Apple TV app in the US will have, as you've mentioned, easy log-on straight through to HBO and Stars and all these other cable networks that have streaming platforms. We don't know which Australian platforms will sign up to be part of that yet.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I think as well, we've got weird licensing deals in terms of, you know, Foxtel, for example, have the rights to Game of Thrones. And I think that they're going to be holding onto that as tight as they can. Mm. So what is HBO now going to look like for us? If it even will exist for us, because it doesn't currently. We can't get it unless you've got a VPN, I'm pretty sure. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how the licensing works. And for companies, even like Stan, who have got the licensing for some AMC shows like Better Call Saul, you know, what's that going to look like? Maybe Stan will come on board as a partner. And
you would think that the people that would most gain from it would be actually the terrestrial broadcasters. So, I mean, if I was ABC iView or SBS On Demand or even 10 All Access, whatever that is. It's all right.
Essentially CBS All Access, which is part of the Apple TV app ecosystem. Gosh, the naming.
Yeah, but except they don't have their two biggest shows.
Yeah.
So the biggest shows on CBS All Active in the US are Star Trek Discovery and The Good Fight, pretty much. And The Good Fight's on SBS and Star Trek Discovery is Netflix for the rest of the world. So the big question for me about 10 All Access is like, what are you without your biggest shows?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing. Australia lived in the borderlands, kind of forgotten by the rest of the world for so long when it came to digital streaming. We had cable TV, we had kind of broadcast TV, and then everything else was just a weird mishmash. So we've got, as Matt says, we've got these existing deals that are carried over from then, and the likes of Foxtel don't want to give up their content deals. So now we've got this weird sort of Frankenstein's monster of different arrangements, different licensing deals. I mean, this really does, as with other parts of what they announced this week, it really feels pretty US first. And I feel like all of those consumers are going to be seeing some great things. And then, it'll roll out in the rest of the world, but it'll probably be kind of a light version.
Yeah, although they did say they're going to roll it out in 100 countries. So I was like, okay, are we one of those?
But imagine something like the new TV app. you log into all of your different streaming services and it's able to give you recommendations across services. So it says you watch this on HBO and this on Stars, you're going to love this other show on Showtime. So that's where those real benefits come in, of that kind of ecosystem all kind of working together. If we have Stan and Amazon Prime and then maybe one or two, let's not lie, kind of, we have a lot of middling streaming services in Australia. Are we really getting the full value out of the upgrades to the app?
Okay. We are in studio with Claire Riley from CNET and Matt Hopkins from Pedestrian. My name is Mark Fennell and we are talking about the week in media, technology and culture. It's been a huge week for Apple in particular. Not only did they announce a new video streaming service called Apple TV Plus, they've also announced, and this one I didn't see coming, they've announced their own credit card.
Yes.
Sorry, why? Why does Apple, what? Why does Apple need a credit card?
Well, it's an odd one because the whole point of Apple Wallet was that they were getting rid of your credit cards so you didn't have to carry them around.
Exactly. So this, if you're not familiar with it, on Apple, on iPhone devices, there's an app called Wallet and you can store cards in there. Except in Australia, you can't store that many different cards because banks and Apple don't get on.
Yeah.
I'm sure this will help with that.
Yeah. This is essentially kind of new features coming to your wallet. So imagine the kind of digital intangible wallet on your phone. There's going to be an Apple provided card, which doesn't have late fees, doesn't have annual fees or international fees, but you do the interest rate changes, I believe, if you're late on payments. But there's things like cash back. So there's this daily cash service. So you can see not only spending on what you're spending and different locations and how your spending breaks down. You can see things like how much cash back and you get to use it kind of daily. What's interesting about this is the physical card is if places don't accept Apple Pay. So it's a titanium card with your name etched on it. And if that's not the most American psycho thing you've ever heard, then...
Isn't it?
Yeah. But, you know, imagine dropping that on the table. It doesn't have a signature or numbers on it. It just has a chip in it. So because obviously if you need a number, then... That's, I guess, for things like internet payments with all the tap and pay, which they're a little behind on in the US. Mm. All the tap and pay, you only need a chip. You don't need numbers for internet purchases because you'll just do that through the digital wallet. So it's this kind of physical version of the intangible credit card system.
Okay. Without like doubling down on turning this whole thing into an Apple ad, I am sort of curious about what this says about the future of payments in general, right? Because like... We've obviously seen Tap and Go become a really important part of the Australian payment ecosystem. Mm-hmm. What Apple is sort of signaling with this is that your payment really should move into being an entirely digital operation. And if we're going to offer you something physical, at best it will be a fashion accessory. That's what I take away from it.
No, you're absolutely right. And what I found interesting was how the cashbacks were, right? So there's 2% cashback on regular purchases, 3% cashback on Apple purchases. And then if you use the physical card, it's only 1%. So they're really trying to funnel people.
Just to stop you there. So you will get a cashback for buying things on Apple.
Yeah. So
that's
But you know, the funniest thing about that is there was I saw someone said that a US bank offers better cashback services through Apple Wallet payments than Apple does on their own things. Like they offer cashback like 3% across everything, which I find really weird. You think if Apple's moving into this market, they're going to be really competitive with actual banks, but they're not.
But but doesn't that tell you that another bank is doing their dirty work for them in a way? Like, and like you've got banks who you are cannibalizing, who are offering preferable deals to support your own product.
But remember,
that is proper American psycho. Sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say that. Remember, you don't know what those banks are offering in terms of fees.
Yeah,
so, you know what? Some credit cards in Australia. I think Australia works more on points and rewards rather than cashback.
Yeah.
You go to the States, all of the ads are about cashback on your credit card. So if you spend $100, you'll get $1 back if you use the physical card in store, and that's real cash that you can just kind of. It's not real physical cash, but you can spend it on your next purchase. So that's a really big thing in the States. The no fees, they're trying to, I guess, be like, you don't have to worry about fees, you don't have to worry about anything. Interest rates changing if you don't pay, that's an interesting proposition. It's a whole bunch of T's and C's. But the spiciest and most interesting take that I saw today was that they have released a credit card or like the Apple payment system, because the one thing we didn't see today, and we haven't talked about news yet, but the one thing we didn't see with their magazine subscription service and their TV subscription service was a bundle. So say if I want to have Apple Music, Apple TV Plus, Apple News Plus, just be subscribed to everything and just have Apple deliver my content into my veins, they haven't got a bundled cost for that. And that was something that a lot of people were asking about. Maybe this whole Apple cashback thing is like
cultists.
Yeah. They look, I work with a lot of them. So, but they have been asking about, well, what's the bundle going to be? And is Apple going to try and have its payment service kind of incentivize you to stay within the Apple ecosystem? So you never have to leave the walled garden. You'll pay with Apple to get your Apple services. You'll get your cashback, which you then spend on more iPads, and it'll, you know, you'll just ride off into the sunset on a Tim Cook unicorn.
Trapped in a cult.
Yeah, yeah. I'm interested to see, because we haven't seen so much around pricing and details, I'm interested to see whether this is the first stepping stone in a much longer play.
Where the cult takes over the world.
I mean, look, if you assume that it hasn't taken over the world, then I think maybe it'd be...
You alluded to it earlier, but it is worth talking about. Apple News has been sort of put into overdrive. It has been referred to now as the Netflix of news. What exactly will it entail, and why, dear God, has any news organisation signed up for it? Like, let's just cannibalise our market even further.
Yeah, look, I can't answer the second question, but what it'll entail is I think it's just for US and Canada users. It's $9.99 a month. It's available now with an iOS update, and it gives you access to titles like Vogue, New Yorker, Wall Street Journal, Time, National Geographic, about 300 titles, but no Washington Post and no New York Times, and they were the big ones pushing back against the cut that Apple was asking for, which I think was rumored to be 50%.
50%, yeah.
So, yikes. Like, I don't know. I guess some of those magazines are thinking, well, no one's getting the dedicated – people are getting the Vogue app or the Time app, but maybe getting Apple users on those 1.4 billion devices, that's a way of saying we don't have to work on our own app. People, we can just get into those eyeballs.
I just – it's sort of like nobody learnt the lessons of – Facebook and instant articles, right? So I know this is a recurring conversation in the show, and yes, I brought up Facebook, so yes, you can drink. But the idea of letting a tech company be a crucial part of your income stream and then slicing off, you know, be it 30% or 50%, to me just seems like a stunningly dangerous long-term proposition.
Yeah, like it's a strange move, and I think from the perspective of who it benefits, I think maybe smaller publishers who are looking to break into a lot or looking to grow their audience, maybe.
Or publishers who've had a declining revenue model. Like,
yeah, so that was another interesting thing that I kind of overlooked when it was rumored, was that I didn't realize it was kind of this whole magazine – like physical, like almost like a physical magazine on your phone, which I'm sure was around before this. But I think maybe, is this just the next revolution of like as physical publications kind of decline in sales, is this where they're going to be renewed? I don't know.
There is an interesting challenge, I think. Like, you know, the Washington Post and the New York Times have obviously had this massive resurgence, in part because of their Trump coverage, and they are considered to be the go-to places for that. And it has given them this sort of brand distinction where people feel like, particularly in the US, you feel like you need to invest in these people because they're the only organizations that are doing like the hard work of holding Trump accountable, which is not true, by the way. There are plenty of organizations that are doing it, but they've certainly built a name for themselves. And off the back of that, I think they've been able to motivate a lot of people to sign up for dedicated subscriptions for themselves. But asking people to sign up for multiple subscriptions, and we're sort of at, for a lot of people that are media consumers at the moment, I personally feel like we're a bit at peak subscription, because it's not just subscriptions for, you know, news organizations, it's subscriptions for Netflix and all this other stuff. And I think the pitch, like if you're a news, if you're an organization that makes journalism, I think it's a much harder ask to get people to hand over money, in part because of the decades of free content that have been spewed out in the world. I guess if you're looking at that and you're a mid-level organization, an organization that isn't regarded as must-use, maybe something like this is valuable. But I just worry that it having people access you through a third party diminishes your brand, which was the issue with Facebook Instant Articles when Facebook did something that had some similar touch points to this. You know, they'd present you this nice, clean version of it that would load really fast, but it also stripped that site a lot of the branding with which you could embed in the mind of the user. I'm looking at this on Vanity Fair or BuzzFeed or CNET or any of those sorts of things where you're like, you can own that attention. And maybe if you're sort of a mid-leveler, it has value for distribution purposes alone.
I mean, I kind of think there's two different things we're talking about here. We're talking about news, right? So absolutely, the news articles that you read on the New York Times, you're really there for content and quotes and who, like what stories they're breaking. With a magazine, it's a very different proposition. And the ability to flip through, say on your iPad and flip through a beautiful glossy magazine, that still very much has the branding there. And for example, for me, I subscribe to Vanity Fair, but I never used the free app version of it because I just like the paper version. But the ability to – I do enjoy looking through the ads because I'm like, well, that's a beautifully shot campaign for whatever label, and that's why I'm into that magazine. And I think maybe then for a Vanity Fair or a Time magazine, they can then go out to their advertisers and say, we're not just selling into print now or into the, I don't know, 100,000 people that have our app. We are potentially – accessing a market of 1.4 billion people who could read this magazine and see your ads in, if they keep it as a kind of a closed off flippable magazine on your device, then that is a potentially big sell for them. It's like getting onto way more newsstands around the world.
Yeah. Do you reckon people do? Like the thing you were saying before about enjoying the sort of the physicality of magazines, Vanity Fair is particularly high quality stories, high quality ads, everything's like premium, right? Do you think people will replicate some of that experience in a digital environment? Because the thing I always come back to is, remember when they launched everybody launched like tablet versions? Like the News Corp launched the Daily, and then there was sort of early versions of this that Apple put out with like Bookshelf or whatever they used to call it. And it sort of just like, it just fizzled a little bit. And I like, if most of the reading we're doing now is increasingly on phones, can you replicate that experience on a phone?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not that customer. I like the paper magazine. I like the physical newspaper as well. I just have never quite gotten into loving the online the same amount. And I know that's this kind of bibliophile in me that needs to let go of the old ways. But I don't know. I haven't been able to replicate that experience. But then my parents, older generation, love reading their magazines and books on iPads. So who knows? Everything's topsy-turvy. Hamburgers eat people.
Download This Show is what you are listening to. Of course they do. Download This Show is what you're listening to. It is your guide to the week in media, technology and culture. End of Apple. All done.
Shut it down.
And instead, let us move to the glorified narcissism engine that is Instagram. I say that as a guilty party. Instagram, in many ways, has been an unofficial shopping platform for lots of people. Now they're going to make it an official shopping platform. Starting from March 19, Instagram will allow users to purchase products directly through the app. It's a bit of an experiment. How will it work, Claire Riley?
So the idea will be that you'll see a brand, potentially maybe even down the track an influencer, and you'll be able to say, I really like that jumper. Click on it. There'll be a little kind of window that pops up. You tap through and you'll have the option to pay through Instagram. So your payment details will already be in the app. How convenient.
Mm-hmm.
With a couple of swipes and clicks, you will have purchased from an account you follow or potentially from a sponsored post in your feed.
I'm going to spend so much money on things that I don't need. How much cut is Instagram taking? Do we know yet?
I don't know. I don't think we do.
Yeah. It's like a closed beta at this stage with just about 20 brands or so, like H&M, Uniqlo, two Kardashian makeup brands because of course, Balmain, and Prada.
Please, can you just do that one more time for me?
Balmain. but the kind of Insta brands, so fast fashion, H&M, they do lots of collaborations, same with Uniqlo, are Prada and
World's
Balmain.
Going to hell.
I'm surprised Gucci isn't in there because all I ever seem to see is Instagram influencers just being like, check out my Gucci.
That's because you follow trash.
I do, yes. And also Christina Yamaguchi, who I don't know. but
God, that's a specific reference.
Yeah. I see this being, once it gets out of that ecosystem and out of those kind of specific brands, I see it being maybe one day down the track, I follow a lot of earring makers, like a lot of people who make plasticky earrings or fun kind of designery stuff, indie designers. Maybe they'll be able to just have tap buy.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think for lots of, I've lost count of the number of people that I know that have started small businesses, particularly in that sort of that fashion end. Mm. People who once upon a time would have gotten started on places like Etsy and, you know, even t-shirts and stuff like that. And if this can, for them, like this could be amazing. Mm. It's going to make so much money. Like, yeah. Rightly or wrongly, it's just going to make an astonishingly large amount of money.
Huge, huge. I mean, like, you look at Instagram as an app and how people use it. Like, you flick through it on the train in the morning. You flick through it when there's a lull in the conversation at the pub.
I flicked through it three times while you two were talking.
There you go. Like, it's just everyone flicks through it at some point if you use the app. So, and assuming that they're going to be tapping into every market. Like, I mean, for example, like, I follow a lot of guitar makers because I play guitar.
We're all cliches here.
Exactly right. So, I mean, it's going to tap into all of those niches, and assuming that it does it right, like, I mean, it's going to work for sure.
Yeah. I would really like to see this opened up to the smaller brands. Definitely. Because it's big brands at the moment, but I mean, I'm a classic case in point. My sister DM'd me the other day of this account I should follow that does all prawn-based fashions. Everything has prawns on it. And that
it really
is
sinks
so, that is so up my alley. It's like,
wedged?
Yeah, it's wedged. And so I follow the account and I find a couple of things I like. I keep an eye on them and then, you know, my thing comes back in stock. And the path from personal recommendation to me interacting with this brand and then me buying, and it's just a local Aussie designer. So that is exactly what brands want. They want to be able to have a friend recommend something to you, so it's not an ad you have to see, which is cheaper for them. Mm. And then you kind of maybe interact with it, you follow it, and then you start buying from them. Like, I'm also kind of just sick of what I see in stores. Like, I just don't feel that my prawn needs are being catered to by the mainstream fashion market.
I mean, look, I will say Instagram has been, at risk of sounding like a cheerleader, it has been very good for widening the tastes of what I buy. Like, once upon a time, I think about 10 years ago where I would buy the stuff that I buy, a lot of it would have just been, oh, you walk into a shopping center and I'm going to buy the thing that has the biggest door and the cheapest price. Because that's what I sounded like 10 years ago. Now, because there are so many indie brands, particularly when it comes to clothes, they pop up on my Instagram because it knows that I'm a soft target. And I find myself buying from more diverse outlets. Now, you know, do we need this amount of consumerism? Probably not. But if I'm going to buy, I like the idea of buying from somebody small rather than buying from somebody big, because clearly I'm a communist. I don't know.
But same for you, right? Your guitar needs, there'd be only a certain number of makers in Australia. Yep. So being able to see stuff globally, I mean, that's what we're seeing so much more of in retail.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, it's, if you can diversify. Yeah, and particularly, as you said, Mark, like local, like get local makers involved. Like, that's amazing. It's going to be great.
All right, well, we've all been sucked into that one. That is all we have time for on the show this week. Huge thank you to Matt Hopkins from Pedestrian Group. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
I say this like there's a crowd. Yeah. There's no crowd.
They're going wild.
Woo! Claire Riley, thanks for coming back.
Thank you for having me.
You may remount the unicorn and charge on out.
In my prawn outfit.
In your prawn outfit. If you enjoyed the show, please leave a review on whichever podcasting app du jour you happen to use. I'm pretty sure that's the wrong use of du jour, but let's go with it anyway. And with that, my name is Mark Fennell, and I will leave you till next week. Thank you for listening.